Chapter 2. Merritt rode south on the stage road next morning, splashing across the clear fork of the Brazos at a ford just below town. He was stiff and sore, and his bruised lips were puffy from the beating he'd taken the night before, but none of that took away from his pleasure at seeing the Phantom Hill country again. His horse was a rangy bay, hard-mouthed and with a strong urge to run. He'd rented the animal at the livery stable after a good breakfast in Bell's jail. Now, in the coolness of the spring morning, he was strongly tempted to let the horse stretch its legs. The land here had hardly changed with the years. The river ran to his left, sluggish and salty, its banks overgrown with cottonwoods and tangled willow brakes. A few buildings straggled south from Gilead, and Merritt could see the smoke from a chimney or two ahead where before there had only been rolling buffalo range. Except for those few traces, he might have been coming in from a week on patrol, with a column of cavalrymen behind him and Clint, First Lieutenant Clint Davidson, at his side. "This'll make great ranch land once we've settled it," Clint had said a score of times, "and I'm coming back and work it. If you understood about cattle, Steve, I understand you'll get a Comanche lance through your gizzard if you don't pay attention to business. You're not saved just because we're across the river. A war party ran off 40 horses from the cavalry lines just last month," Clint finished, grinning. He pulled off his hat and drew a hand through his bristling blonde hair. "I know, General. What do they do at West Point to make you regulars so serious?"
"Anyway, we won't live long enough to see this place settled. We'll never tame it."
"Nonsense, my boy. Just picture me in a few years, settled down with a little wife, that redhead from the laundress's quarters, maybe, sitting on a porch in the evening with a drink in my hand, telling the little tykes how me and Uncle Steve used to fight the Indians."
Clint had joked about it, as if he joked about everything. But he'd been serious enough to come back and look for his dream. The way Bell told it, things had worked out pretty much as Clint had predicted. He had a wife and a son, a homestead near the site of the old fort, and old Uncle Steve come to join them. Everything had worked out, except Clint was missing, and the hick local lawman didn't seem to have much idea where to look for him. A movement down by the river snapped Merrick back to awareness. He rose in the stirrups for a better look, then grimaced at his own caution. No Comanches were hiding there. No Confederate cavalry waiting to swoop down on him. Some big animal, half hidden by the trees, was grazing in the river bottoms. Somebody's cow, he thought, or maybe a browsing deer. Then it moved forward into a clear space, and he saw that it was a horse, saddled, its reins dragging as if it might have pulled free from a hastily tied knot. Sheer reflex made Merritt haul back on his reins and turn the mount's head toward the thicket. It was automatic. You made yourself as small a target as possible, facing the place from where the enemy would come. He shook his head sourly. Maybe someday he'd stop acting like an old fire horse. A shot came from the brush, a spurt of powder smoke marking its source, the bullet snapping past low to his left. Without conscious thought, he slid off his horse. His right hand wrenched his rifle from its boot, and his left hand swatted the bay on the rump. The horse bolted, blocking the bushwhacker's line of fire for a moment, and in that moment Merritt dropped flat and found what cover he could. Watching the drifting smoke, he levered a cartridge into the rifle's chamber. It was a Spencer carbine, the kind the cavalry had carried toward the end of the war. He'd bought it in Cincinnati, especially bring out with him. Now, he thought with grim satisfaction, it was going to give somebody an ugly surprise. Merritt eased back the Spencer's hammer and fired toward the clump of brush. Immediately, the other rifle spoke again, this time from a point farther downstream. Merritt pumped the trigger guard, putting two bullets squarely into the middle of the new cloud of smoke. Without waiting to see the result, he sprang up, dashed 15 yards on a slant, and dropped again. There was no reply from the hidden rifleman. Merritt raised his head carefully to scan the tree line. The horse he'd seen earlier was out of sight among the thickets, and nothing moved in the area the last shot had come from. He started to cock the carbine again, then changed his mind. He had 4 rounds left. Extra ammunition was in his saddlebags, still with the horse, wherever it was, and he meant to be sure where the next one went. The Spencer held in front of him, he snaked through the grass toward the river. If he could get to the place where the gunman wasn't sheltered by a cut bank, a third bullet was closer, plowing into the soft earth barely an arm's length from his face. He cocked the Spencer and snapped a shot back. Almost at once, there was a crashing among the brush, then the drum of hoofbeats on the solid ground across the river.